is a quick and dirty micro study, is what I would call it. We've seen some national wide surveys and some interesting things. This is the outcome of a quick and dirty little look back at what changing a response modality did to potentially change safety in an EMS system. I am John Russell, have worked with Nadine Levick, and if those of you that know Nadine, you know, she's this short, bubbly gal who talks with an Australian accent. I'm just a fat old guy from Missouri. So forgive me, but I will try to get through this fairly quickly. Page 10, I got that. I started my EMS career as an EMT back in 1975, and just for my elucidation in the crowd here, how many of you all actually have some role or responsibility with pre-hospital care? Anybody? All right, 15% or so. So that helps me understand, because I tend to get off and start talking like everybody in the world knows what ambulance services does and EMS does and how things work. So I'll try to carve this talk a little bit into something that's perhaps a bit more understandable for most of the room. In this little look-back study, Cape County Private Ambulance Services serves a population of about 100,000 in southeast Missouri. It's a rural area. It's not urban by any stretch of imagination. The service area is served by a multi-tiered response system. There are fire department first responder systems, BLS ambulances, as well as ALS. The ambulance service there is a single 911 emergency ambulance service provider. They also do the non-emergency transfer, interfacility transfer work. They own their own dispatch center, and it's the endpoint for three different 911 systems in the response area. You get out in the rural network, and there's certain battles that occur politically. Somebody's fire department doesn't want somebody else's police department dispatching for them. And that's what happens in this area. We have 911 centers that answer the phone for the city of Cape Girardeau, the city of Jackson, and then there's the county, which is everybody else. But so we have an upside-down triangle, which is kind of dysfunctional, but it works. The ambulance service has used medical priority dispatch system since the early 1990s. That's Dr. Jeff Clausen from Salt Lake City system. It's been widely used. It's used internationally, and it's been validated for its accuracy. This is a quick overview of medical priority dispatch for folks. There's, in essence, six dispatch determinants that are made. If you watch any of the reality TV shows, court TV, etc., you listen to the 911 tapes, the MPDS system is where the dispatcher asks questions of the caller, makes a triage determination of what the problem is, dispatches out the appropriate resource, and then provide some sort of pre-arrival instructions and so forth. So it's a fairly complex process, and in this particular system, they have trained qualified emergency medical dispatchers. This is a diagram that shows basically what the determinants are. Omega is a non-dispatch determinant. That is like a poison control center referral. Somebody calls 911, hey, my kid got into, you know, dad's Pepsi. Okay, call 911, you know, a conference call to the poison control center. Alpha, Bravo, Charlie, and Delta are responses that are, as you can see by the graph, either more important on a time basis clinically, are require an increasing capability of the responder. Echo responses are what I call dead people. These are trips which are determined that the dispatcher immediately knows that the patient that is being referred to has a serious life-threatening event, and it's usually caught with, is the patient breathing? No. That's an echo response. Okay? So it's throw the kitchen sink at the problem. A little background in why we started doing this. I got to know Nadine back in 2000, fall of 2000, I believe. And we have a EMS transport safety crisis in the country right now. There is some interesting statistics. Dr. Brian McGuire has published some. If you look at EMS, there is a 9.6 fatalities, occupational fatality rate per 100,000 employees. You compare that to the fire service, which is about 4.5, or the national average, which is 2. We have a safety problem in EMS, and it's related to vehicle crashes, okay? And it's related to running red lights and siren. If you turn the red lights and siren on the vehicle, you're about 7 times more likely to have a crash. If you have a crash, that crash is going to occur at an intersection, okay? And numbers-wise, the best numbers we can gather, EMS does not have a national database to collect injury and fatality data like the fire service does. So it's hit or miss as to whether we know about it. Some state agencies require reporting, others don't. We play around in the FARS data and the STARS data to try to get a handle on it. But you can go to EMS Network crash log on the, and you can see how often it happens. We are injuring 10 to 12,000 EMS workers every year, and we're killing 50 to 60 a year. So it's a significant thing. We've also figured out that you take a sick person and you put them in an ambulance, and you have the dichotomy of taking somebody who is ill and putting them in the most dangerous mode of transportation per mile traveled that exists in the United States. So we need to work on this. That's how we got to this point. We said, how can we reduce lights and sirens usage? We started looking at medical priority dispatch, and we started looking at this determinant grid, and we said, what happens if we turn red lights and siren off for Bravo responses? Okay, we'd already turned it off for Alpha responses. Alpha responses are, grandma fell 3 days ago, I think she needs to go to the ER, I can't get her in the car. That's the kind of response that Alpha responses are. Bravo responses tend to be, oh my gosh, there's been a crash in my front yard. I know somebody's hurt. Okay? So there's a lot of third-party reporting things that end up in the Bravo determinants. And when we started looking at it, we said, can we turn that off? So we turned it off in March of 2005. The medical director of the ambulance service got real nervous, and he says, you know, guys, we better look at this, make sure we're not doing something horrible bad here. So we agreed, and we compared the last 6 months of 2004 to the last 6 months of 2005, trying to get a snapshot. Again, microcosm, single provider, same area, same part of thing. We were trying to hold as much as we could. As it turns out, we had similar trip numbers, similar weather, demand factors, and so forth. Here's the distribution by determinant level, Alpha, Bravo, Charlie, Delta, Echo, and Omega. As an aside, Echo responses, remember, are those kind of the patients dead. That's where out-of-hospital or pre-hospital cardiac arrest falls. Interestingly enough, we have spent years and years and millions of dollars, if not more, measuring EMS system efficacy by trying to measure how well EMS systems handle the echo calls. I'm not sure that's a really good sign of EMS effectiveness, particularly when the time critical diagnoses that we're starting to worry about, STEMI, stroke, trauma, etc., are all in the Charlie and Delta columns. Okay, so take that home and start to look at it. As you can see, basically same distributions. This is what I call Grandma Mabel's common sense slide. If you turn the lights and siren off, you run fewer trips with lights and siren. And that's exactly what you see. We move that no lights and siren box to above 50%, which is kind of remarkable. I think that at least over half the time when 911 phone rings, that ambulance doesn't have to come to you with red lights and siren. And then we looked at what happened after the crew got to the scene and transported the patient back to the hospital. And this is the response from scene. And as you can see, once the ambulance got there, there really wasn't much change between what they found and how they ran that trip back to the hospital. So think of this as kind of two legs of the trip. There's to the scene, red lights and siren or no lights and siren, and from the scene, red lights and siren. We looked at that little piece, maybe I can make this work, that little center column there, lights and siren, and we wanted to see what happened, make sure that we weren't doing anything bad in that section. So we looked at this as from the scene with lights and siren versus to the scene. So that little 10% block, when we expand that out, you see that about, you know, 0.8% of the time, the ambulance crew was dispatched to the scene without lights and siren, and then the ambulance crew found some sort of condition of the patient that the ambulance crew decided this was life-threatening enough that they felt like they had to go back to the hospital with red lights and siren. Not a lot of difference here between the changes. That little almost 1% represents what I call the false negative rate in the dispatch system. That's where the dispatcher, for whatever reason, didn't get all the clinically appropriate information to make the appropriate determination. More importantly, is that when you stack all those things up, you're still talking about less than 10% of the trips that get an ambulance gets dispatched to, that the crew, these are basic EMTs and paramedics, feel like it's necessary to run red lights and siren back to the hospital with. And when you look at it from scene, again, you see the same normal common sense variety. This is the money slide, though. This is a statistically significant marker. In the trips where we had previously been running red lights and siren to, and we found no patient, and no patient was transported. Okay? Patient, there was somebody there and they refused care, or the patient, there wasn't anybody there. You can see that prior, when running those Bravo responses, 15.6% of the time ran red lights and siren to the scene and didn't find anybody. Now by just turning the lights and siren off, we're not affecting the false negative rate, we're not affecting the overall response back to the hospital with red lights and siren, but we're not running red lights and siren to find out there's not a patient there. Okay? And in this particular system, small, rural system, not huge numbers, but this translates into 520, 550 responses a year that used to be run with red lights and siren that are not. And that's a significant safety improvement factor for the community, the people on the ambulance, and the people that get hit by ambulances in intersections. So, in conclusion, changing Bravo response to no lights and siren, response modality resulted in a predictable decrease in lights and siren responses. Yeah, actually it fell below you know, 50% are now, less than 50% are lights and siren responses. Appears that there was not a change in false negatives, i.e. no lights and siren response resulting in a lights and siren transport to the hospital. But there was a There was a statistically significant number of no transport, no patient found trips that now have a no lights and siren response. So we cleaned it up a bit. Take home message, 911 equals emergency equals red lights and siren response thinking needs to be changed. Okay, we need to think instead in terms of immediate response. If you are in a system that has response time contractual parameters, those contracts need to be clear about what counts as an emergency or an immediate response. Those contracts, some of them are multi-year and multi-decades in marketing, so some of those may need to be modified or renegotiated. And we know that medical priority dispatch system has been validated to accurately triage the type of call and the type of care needed, but it's in this defining response modalities, in other words, what kind of call determinant gets what kind of response, a red lights and siren or an immediate or response, is where the safety dividends for the system come from. So I think that's it. I should point out, and Nadine will shoot me if I don't say this, these slides and information will be available on her website, www.objectivesafety.net, and we did put the raw data in if you all want to look at it. So.
Take two questions.
Very little, actually. There's been a number of studies. National Academy of Emergency Medical Dispatchers has published a number of pieces on that. The accepted range is 45 seconds to a minute. So really, very little difference in running red lights and siren versus non-red lights and siren.
There was one other one. In the back?
Let me see if I can repeat that for the recording. You're questioning if we had looked to see if there had really been any adverse change in the patient outcome?
Yeah.
Okay, in the endpoint of patient outcome. This is pre-hospital data. We're dependent upon field data reports and so forth. No, this did not look at clinical outcome data, as in looking at patient care reports at time of discharge of the ER or anything of that nature. This is all pre-hospital looking at dispatch data, and we kind of hung our hat on the fact that there was not a significant change, even though the numbers are relatively small and you're trying to prove a negative and you get into the statistical battle of power. The fact that we did not see significant change in that from the scene transport mode to the hospital. We assumed that there was not being a whole lot of difference in what the paramedic and EMT staff were seeing. That answered the question? Okay.
That's a desperate plea for one last one back there.
Actually, no red lights and siren means that it's traveling with normal traffic flow and it better stop at that stop sign or stoplight. Okay? And that's probably the other piece that I didn't say is that red lights and siren, from a mechanical perspective, if you look at intersection closure rates and so forth, it's almost impossible from a rule of physics for an opposing vehicle to stop, even if they do see and hear the red lights and siren. So the policy of the operator of the emergency vehicle is they should stop any time that they are approaching an intersection and make sure that everybody else stops before they enter the intersection. Now, functionally, that doesn't happen, and that's why we're having the intersection accidents with red lights and siren.
Can I ask you to ask Dr. Russell about that afterwards? Is that okay? I'm going to end the session. Thank you very much, everybody, for your attention.